Well, good evening. So I don't know how the other guys that preach from time to time do it, but since I preach from time to time, I always try to have a sermon in my mind because a lot of times we're not given a lot of notice. Maybe Corey's sick or something like this pops up and he has to leave, and I never want to say no if they ask me to preach, so I always have one in my mind. You'll be somewhere and something will come to your mind, or you'll hear something, you'll be like, oh, that'll make a good sermon. And then you'll spend a few days driving down the road or sitting on a tractor, and you'll just keep, I call it percolating, you just keep thinking about it, and this verse and this example, and then all of a sudden you're like, it's done. And when Gage was here, he said something, and it got me thinking, and I was like, oh, that's a perfect sermon. And the next few days, like I spent time in my mind, and I put it all together, and I can remember thinking, this honestly may be the best sermon I've ever preached. And Corey called Friday and asked if I would preach, and I was excited because I was really looking forward to this sermon. For the life of me, I can't remember what it is. And this has never happened to me before. So I realized that I've reached that stage in life that when I come up with the perfect sermon, I've got to write it down, because when I need it, it is gone. So I was convinced that when I woke up this morning, I would for sure remember the sermon. And when I woke up this morning, I had nothing, so I was getting a little nervous. And I was walking through the barn this morning, the coop with all of the chickens, and, you know, sometimes they're kind of frustrating. And I was just walking through there, and it just hit me. Like, I wonder how many times God looks down at us and thinks about us the same way I will look down walking through that barn and think about those chickens. Sometimes they're pretty frustrating. So tonight, no offense, but I would like to make six comparisons of how we as Christians can act just like my chickens. And hopefully we can draw something from it. And if nothing else, it's all I've got, because I forgot the greatest sermon that was ever going to be preached. And I was out of time. So, we laugh about it, but throughout the Bible, often we're referred to as sheep. It's not uncommon for the Bible to use things in life that help us to relate, because it paints a picture. When we think about these things, it really paints a picture. So God and Christ used a lot of parables, a lot of illustrations like that, because it just sinks in. So as we go through these, even if you're not a chicken farmer, I'm convinced that you'll be able to make some pretty relatable things. Number one, chickens follow the crowd. So when we walk through that door of the barn and we start walking to the other end, every single one of those chickens are going to get behind you and just start walking. And the whole, all of them down, you're not familiar with the barn, but there's some concrete. All of them are going to follow you. All of the ones on the slats are going to follow you. And all the ones up on the nest box are going to follow you. They're all going to go to the other end of the barn. And when you turn around and walk back on the other side, they're all going to follow you back. They don't know why. They're just going to follow you. So it's pretty neat to walk through there and see 20,000 birds following, well, less for me because mine die, but for the normal person, 20,000 birds following behind you. They don't know why, they don't know where they're going, they just follow you. And I wonder how often we as Christians spiritually follow the crowd, having no idea what they're doing or where they go, or we just do it because everybody else is. I'm convinced if 20,000 people started going somewhere, a lot of us would follow in, because that's a lot of people. It's got to be something good, even though, honestly, we have no idea what it is. When we start talking about going along with the crowd, a lot of times we like to associate that with our kids, and we talk about this thing called peer pressure. But a newsflash, this isn't just for the kids. We as adults all too often follow the crowd. Oh, you've got to watch that movie. It's a great movie. Oh, here's a funny video that I saw on the internet. You've got to watch it. It's the funniest video you'll ever see. Oh, did you hear about so-and-so and what they did? Have you heard that going around town? How many of us as adults are guilty of following the crowd? Getting caught up in all of the stuff that's going on in the world, being like the other 20,000 around us and doing what they do and associating ourselves with things that we know aren't right. We watch the video and we laugh, and we know it's wrong to laugh at it. We watch the movie, and about halfway through it, we're like, this is not a good movie to watch, but now we're halfway through it. We hear about so-and-so, and what do? Well, we've got to tell somebody else about so-and-so. We as Christians follow the crowd. In Matthew chapter 15, Jesus is dealing with the Pharisees and the scribes, who, as we know, are the religious leaders of his day. And they had confronted Jesus about why his disciples were not following their traditions of washing their hands before eating. They were very concerned about these traditions of men. But then Jesus turns the conversation around and points out all of their hypocrisy. They're just being hypocrites. And there in Matthew chapter 15, starting there in verse 13, "But he answered and said, every plant which my heavenly Father has not planted will be uprooted. Let them alone. They are blind leaders of the blind. And if the blind leads the blind, both will fall into the ditch." I am 100% convinced that I could go down there right now and lead 20,000 chickens into a ditch. They'll just follow. And we laugh about that, but apply that to our own lives. How many times are we guilty of doing this same thing? But what Christ said here is interesting. What does he call about these leaders? What's he say about them? They're blind. They don't know where they're going. You think you're following them because they're leaders. These are the scribes and the Pharisees. These are supposed to be the people that have it figured out. So we're trying to follow them. But they're blind. All too often we get behind what we consider leaders and we follow them. But in reality, they are blind. They have no idea where they're going. And most definitely, it often does not align with where Christ wants us to go. I think about in Exodus chapter 32, we read about when Moses went up on Mount Sinai, and he was there for only 40 days. Now, the older we get, we know 40 days is pretty quick. Think what happened in that amount of 40 days. We're not talking about years. We're talking about 40 days. The people became rebellious. They built a calf, and they started worshiping it. All of that happened within a matter of 40 days. Now, how did that start? How did you get to that point in 40 days? Probably from one individual. And he talks to the second individual and the third individual, and there's a lot more than 20,000 of them there. And they convinced all of them, including Aaron, to build a golden calf, not only to build it, but worship it. These were adults. These weren't kids falling to peer pressure. These were adults that knew better. The blind leading the blind. Again, we as Christians have to be careful because it can happen to us. Knowing that it can happen to us, it kind of got me thinking and reminds me of a verse that we tell our kids all the time, but maybe we as adults should think about it too, and that's in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, which everybody knows what that says. But evil company corrupts good habits. You want to not follow the blind? Don't associate with the blind. Don't be around the blind. So we as Christians cannot follow the crowd. We are called to be the light, to be different. We will not be found in the masses that are going this direction. That's not where you're going to find Christians. We're going to look different. We're going to set apart. We're going to be the one chicken on the far end of the building that just sits there while everybody else is going away. That's the person that God requires us to be. Number two. This really, I don't understand the chickens when it comes to this. But when danger comes, especially when the lights are off, the chickens will just sit there. So when the lights go off, those chickens stop and they will not move. So one by one, a fox or whatever could go in there and kill every single one of them. And literally, one will be sitting there on the perch and see his friend go away, and he'll just sit there smiling like, I wonder what's coming. Like, they just, and then they'll get the next one, and then the next one thinks the same way. They just get picked off. They just seem to freeze when danger comes, and they don't move. Now, you would think that even if you believe in evolution, that somewhere along the ways, the chicken would have learned to run from the predators, but that's just not how it is. Again, we laugh about this, but when our spiritual light is dim, when our faith is weak, how often when we see the devil coming, do we just sit there? We just almost sit in that spot right next to our temptation or right next to that thing that always gets us. We see it's right there. We know Satan's coming, but we just kind of sit there. And then it gets us. So in this fashion, no doubt, again, we can often be like a chicken. We have been warned about the devil in 1 Peter chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. Again, verse we're very familiar with, or verses, be sober. The Bible wants us to know how the devil works. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him, steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world. This is the perfect example of the chickens. If a lion came in there and got one, the next one will just sit there and wouldn't get it. It's almost like they know it's coming, but they just don't know they can do anything about it. And all too often, again, I think we as Christians sit next to the temptation instead of just getting out of there, just fleeing the danger. We can read several examples of this in the Bible, and for the sake of time, we're not going to go read each individual case, but it's ones all of us are very familiar with. In Genesis chapter 3, when Satan went up to Eve, did she stay there and have a conversation with him? Yes. Why didn't she just run the other direction? Why didn't she just get out of there? She was like a chicken. In Genesis chapter 13, Lot, he had so many choices of what he could have done. What land did he choose? He chose the land right over there by Satan and then continued to get closer. Look what happened to Lot. He chose that. He chose to be the chicken. When the danger came, he set. He didn't move. In 2 Samuel chapter 11, David, he stayed there. He stayed. He looked. He didn't move. A lot of times the kings would have been out at the battle, but he was there. He stayed. He saw the temptation. He could have got away from it, but he just sat there. Again, right there, the devil's right there. And they just stay. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22, it says, flee also youthful lust, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace with those who call on the Lord of our pure heart. What's it say we're supposed to do about lust? Now, when we hear the word lust, we often think about sexual things, but lust is far bigger than that. It's things that we go after, that we want in our life, that we shouldn't want. What's it say we should do? Flee. Run. Get away from it. When one chicken gets picked off, the other should know to run. And we as Christians ought to be smart enough to see when we're lying with the devil, we're going to get bit. It's just true. In Genesis chapter 39, if you'll turn over there, we have a perfect example of what we ought to do. In Genesis chapter 39, starting there in verse 6, there at the last part of verse 6, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. Is that how we act when sin comes knocking on our door? Do we go back to get our phone? Do we stop to finish our conversation? Do we turn the TV off right away, or do we continue to watch till the movie's over? Do we flee it? Do we run and leave everything behind? He didn't care about his garments. He didn't care about anything. He just wanted out of there. That's how you would think a chicken would act when it was getting attacked by a predator, but they don't. Again, we laugh about that, but I'll ask, how many times do we as Christians sit there instead of fleeing like what we ought to do? The third thing, in the daylight, chickens spook really easily. So you can just be walking down through there, and maybe you bend over to grab an egg, or maybe you reach to do something, and I mean, it's just like, woof! It's just like you jumped on a bunch of turkeys, and they are just gone, and then all the rest of them spook, and they don't even know why they're spooked. They're just getting out of there. And it's weird to me, at night, they'll sit there and be ate one by one, but in the day, if you move the wrong way or blink the wrong way, they scatter, and litter flies everywhere, and it's just a mess. Sometimes I wonder spiritually how often we get spooked. How often we fear things that we ought to do. We hear all the time, what are the two things that you just don't ever talk about? Politics and religion. Why don't we talk about those? Because we're scared what? We're scared we're going to offend somebody. So you don't want to talk to your boss about religion. You don't want to talk to your neighbor about religion. You don't want to talk about your family about religion. Why? It's kind of like I asked the chickens, why did you just spook? It makes no sense. Why do we spook? Why do we spook at the Thanksgiving table when a family member brings up something that's not scriptural? Why do we spook in the workplace when your boss says something that's just not right? Why do we spook in the community when somebody says something that's not biblical? It's almost like we scatter. Like you walk over there and someone's having a conversation and they bring up religion and we're like, whoops, not going to do that today. We just get away from it. We spook just as the chickens do. There's a lot of examples of the Bible where this very thing happened. Again, for the sake of time, we won't turn to all of them, but in Numbers chapter 13 and 14, the spies were afraid of Canaan. They spooked. I don't even know if they know why. They're giants. They just spooked. Just scared. In 1 Kings chapter 19, right after boldly defeating the prophets of Baal, Elijah heard Jezebel threaten him, and he immediately fled in fear. Why? You would have thought, of all people, he knew who was on his side. But he heard there was somebody out to get him. Poof. He was gone. He spooked. In Matthew chapter 26, when Jesus was arrested, what do we read there in verse 56 in Matthew chapter 23? Then all of the disciples forsook him and fled. Now, these were his people. This was almost like, you know, like if you're ever getting in a fight and you got all your friends behind you and you're like, oh, bring it. And then you turn around and they're all gone. Like, they spooked. Of all the people, these are the ones that shouldn't have spooked, but they fled. They fled. Later in Matthew chapter 26, we read specifically of Peter, who had originally sworn boldly that he would never reject Jesus. And he did it three times. He spooked. He got nervous, and he spooked. In 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7, it says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of sound mind." Are we supposed to be fearful people? God didn't want us as Christians to spook, to be fearful people. He wanted us to stand and defend. In Daniel chapter 3, if you'd like to turn there, you can read a lot of examples in the Bible of people who didn't spook. In Daniel chapter 3, starting there in verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, Let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Did these three spook? No. Did they understand what the consequences were going to be? I'm pretty sure they're pretty certain of it. They didn't spook, though. They stood their ground. They were polite. They stood their ground and said exactly what they're going to do. Later on in Daniel in chapter 6, verse 10, now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. What did he do? He went home in his upper room and hid. He spooked. When he found out that he couldn't pray anymore, is that what Daniel did? Do you think Daniel knew the consequences? No, he heard it was signed. He didn't go home and think about it. He didn't go home and spend a few days meditating about it. He went home, and in his upper room with his windows open, he didn't hide. He opened them towards Jerusalem. He knelt down on his knee three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. He didn't change it to two prayers or to one prayer to try to hide him. He didn't pray at night. He didn't pray in the room. He didn't just not pray. He didn't spook. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. Number four, chickens require near perfect conditions to be fruitful. I have not mastered this yet, but based on feed, water, humidity, air take, what day of the week the letter starts with, what the temperature is inside, outside, what way my hair is combed, if all of those are right, the chicken might have an egg. That's what I've learned. Everything has to be perfect. And if one of those gets off, the egg production drops. We laugh about this, but in our spiritual life, how many times do we wait for things to be just perfect before we talk to somebody? Before we bear fruit, how many times do things have to be just perfect? How many times do we get up the courage? We're going to finally talk to somebody. We go up there and then we're like, just not a good day. Just not the right time. There was somebody else. It's got to be just perfect for us to bear fruit. When you think about the parable of the sower that we read about in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, how much time did the sower spend looking at the soil? Like, I think he was just throwing it out there. Some was good ground, but most of it sounded like it wasn't good ground. But he didn't analyze the ground and say, okay, we're going to fertilize this. We're going to put in some irrigation. We're going to get some soil samples. We're going to get the pH upright. We're going to get a rock picker and pick up all the rocks. And then we're going to sow the seed. It's got to be perfect. No, just throw the seed. We as Christians cannot wait for things to be perfect to bear fruit. We've got to bear fruit all the time. In Acts chapter 24, if you'd like to turn there. Starting there in verse 22. So he commanded the centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty, and told him not to forbid any of his friends to promote or to provide for or visit him. And after some days, when Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was Jewish, he sent for Paul and heard him concerning the faith in Christ. Now as he reasoned about righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix was afraid and answered, "Go away for now. When I have a convenient time, I will call for you." Now this is a little bit on the other hand. This is the person that's listening. But again, it's a reminder, and it's very applicable to us as the sowers, of how often we just want to think, "Go away. Today's just not convenient. I do want to talk to you about God, but today's not the day. I am having a bad day. I am not prepared today. There are too many people around today." And we think of this word convenient. Like, is it convenient? And we're waiting for the convenient So on the day of judgment, and I'm not preaching to you guys, I'm talking to myself, but I can't imagine the times that God's going to ask me, like, is it convenient today? Like, is today a convenient day for you for the day of judgment? Just because of all the times that I waited for the perfect scenario to do what we ought to do. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58, therefore, my beloved brother, be steadfast, immovable. This word's very important. Always. Always is like the word all. Always. Abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. So when we're laboring and the soil is not right, is that in vain? Here it says not. It says that we're always to be laboring. Always. And it's not in vain. Even if they don't receive the seed, it's not in vain. In Acts chapter 8, if you'd like to turn there, Acts chapter 8, starting there in verse 26. Now an angel to the Lord spoke to Philip, saying, arise and go toward the south along the road which goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. This is desert. So he arose and went, and behold, a man of Ethiopia, a eunuch of great authority under Candace, the queen of Ethiopians, who had charger of all the treasury and had come to Jerusalem to worship, was returning. And sitting in his chariot, he was reading Isaiah the prophet. Then the Spirit said to Philip, go near and overtake this chariot. So listen, what did Philip do? It's not very convenient right now. We'll do it a little bit later. I'm going to grab a bite to eat from my travels. And then, you know, so Philip ran. Philip ran to him and heard him reading the prophet Isaiah and said, do you understand what you are reading? In the Great Commission, the Lord told us to do the same thing that he just specifically told Philip, to go and talk to this person. And what did Philip do? He ran. He ran. He didn't wait for anything to be perfect. He didn't even take the time to think about if it was perfect. He just ran. So we as Christians cannot be like chickens. We cannot make sure everything's perfect before we do what we ought to do. Number five, chickens resist direction. So if my door is over here and I have a chicken right here that I need to go through that door, how would you think I need to do? What do you think I need to do to get the chicken right here to go through that door? Now, most of you would say, Brian, common sense is you would come over here and you would go, go on, chicken. If you do that to a chicken and you walk towards that chicken, you know what that chicken's going to do? It's going to run at you and flog you and go past you and go this direction. So if I want my chicken to go over there, I will literally go at him this direction. So you think that's stupid, but that's the truth. That's just how they operate. How many times do we as Christians, when God is trying through his providential hand, as Billy spent his lesson on this morning, God has a plan for us. How many times is God trying to get us to go through that door and we're just trying to run over the top of him to get away from it? Just flogging him and flapping our wings, just try to get away as fast as we can. And then God tries again just to herd us through that door. And we just turn around and run right back over the top of him. I just wonder, we don't all know God's providential hand. But as Billy said this morning, we know he has a plan for each one of us. And all too often, I feel like we fight the plan. We fight against it. We just act like chickens when it comes to that. Again, throughout the Bible, you can find several examples of this. Once again, we won't turn to all of them. In Jonah chapter 1, Jonah went the opposite way that God told him to go. In Numbers chapter 14, Balaam continued to push forward even though God repeatedly warned him to stop. He just kept going. In Numbers chapter 14, after God delivered Israel from slavery, what did they say? In Numbers chapter 14, verse 4, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. So God's trying to get him to go this way. They just wanted to go back. We can act a lot like chickens. We can fight the way that God wants us to go, and all too often I think we do. In Psalms chapter 119, verse 105, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. God tells us the direction we need to go right here. Right here, he tells us the direction we need to go. How often do we fight against it? I know that's what it says, but I know you read that there, but I think someone else said, that's really hard to process. That's really hard to think that a loving God would do such a mean thing. We fight against it. But God has lit our pathway from His Word. We know the direction we need to go. In Genesis chapter 12, if you'd like to turn there, in Genesis chapter 12, starting there in verse 1, now the Lord had said to Abram, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house, to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curse you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. The Lord's asking a pretty big thing of Abram, right? There's a lot of us, when I look around the room, there's a lot of people that were born in this area and raised in this area. This is our home. Like, if someone attacks it, we're going to fight it. This is our home. And just if God came and said, I want you to leave this place and leave your family and just pack it all up and go, that's going to be hard for a lot of us. What'd Abram do when God's trying to get him to go a specific direction? Sure, Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him. We don't really read a lot of pushback. We don't really read a lot about his family still here. It just, one verse flows into the other. God told him all these things he shall do, and Abram departed as the Lord has spoken to him. I understand that God has not specifically came to us and told us to do a specific thing, but he has. He has specifically told us what to do. We know what we need to do. Are we like Abram where we just do it? Or do we often fight against it? In Genesis chapter 6, God told Noah to build an ark. It never had even rained. Build an ark. I can only imagine. Like, people think I do some crazy things. Can you imagine building an ark when it's never even rained? But what do we read in Genesis chapter 6, verse 22? Thus Noah did according to all, Corey's favorite word, all, that God commanded him, so he did. God's trying to get him to go a specific way. Did he fly back over the top of him? No. He just went. God told Ananias in Acts chapter 9 to go to Saul. Now, Ananias was like, wait a minute. Like, I've heard about that guy. I mean, that's a tough ask. I've heard about that guy. I know what he does. But in Acts chapter 9, verse 17, what's it say? And Ananias went his way. He had concerns. We may have concerns sometimes, but he still went. He went the direction that God wanted him to go. If we truly trust God and we trust what the Bible says and we believe that He has the best of our interest at hand, when we can tell He's trying to get us a specific direction, we will just go. We will just go. And if we don't know what direction we ought to be going, we probably should spend a little bit more time studying, because He tells us the direction that we need to go. Your favorite one, because this is the last one. Number 6. This is the most frustrating. Chickens die easily. They find new ways to die every day that I don't even know how they came up with that. And it makes me sit and think, I wonder if God looks down at us and thinks about us spiritually and thinks, how in the world did they spiritually die because of that? Like, we laugh, there's a kind of saying, like, I didn't have that on my bingo card today. Like, when I go down there and a chicken's hung itself in the feeder, I'm like, huh, of all the ways I thought you were going to die today, I didn't have that one picked. Like, that wasn't what I thought Monday was going to bring. But I just wonder sometimes if God looks down at us and sees all of the way that the world is spiritually dying and thinks, I mean, like, I can only imagine during the first abortion. Can you imagine God? Like, of all of the ways I thought my people could spiritually die, and they picked this. The first time that a man decided he wanted to become a woman, and God thinks, of all the ways, this is the way they chose to spiritually die. Now, I know those are some extremes, but when thinking about the temptations in our lives and the lust in our lives, and we have such a wonderful life that God has provided, but we go find this one lust, and if he just doesn't look down and think, how did they spiritually die over that? And it just makes his head turn. In Leviticus chapter 10, Nadab and Abihu, offering strange fire, spiritually died. Physically too, spiritually died. 2 Samuel chapter 6, Uzzah touches the ark. Again, physical death, but also spiritual death. Joshua chapter 7, Achan taking the hidden treasure, spiritual death. Physical death too. But again, God has to think, why? Like, out of all of this that you could have had, why choose this? Joshua chapter 7, or we did that one. Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira. Like, they didn't even go ask him to give anything. Like, they went looking. They went looking. They could have given them whatever partial it was, and everybody would have been so excited. But I want to look good in front of people, so I'm going to say that it was more than it was. Spiritually death, physically death. But why? Why spiritually die like that? When a lot of these things, these examples we just looked at, that wasn't needed. It just wasn't needed. There were so many other options. It just wasn't needed. In Matthew chapter 24, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. Again, if you ask the kids, places during Kids Sync, Revelations 2, chapter 10, be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life. We have to watch to make sure that we aren't spiritually dying at all, but especially over something extremely ridiculous. Splitting hairs in the Bible, getting upset about certain things, wanting things to be our way, chasing these lusts of the world that are small when we have this great life over here, this wonderful life over here, but it's almost like it's too good over here, so we want to go after this little thing and spiritually die. So tonight, I hope that we've learned a few lessons from the chickens. I hope we learned that we shouldn't follow the crowd. A lot of times, it's the blind leading the blind. When we see the devil coming, run. Get out of the way. Get yourself apart from it. Don't spook easily. Don't spook easily. Don't be afraid to talk about the two things you're not supposed to talk about. God calls us to do that. Don't wait for things to be perfect to be fruitful. There's not a lot of perfect days. We've got to be fruitful every day. When we know God is trying to get us to go a specific direction, go that direction. Don't fight it. And most importantly, don't easily be spiritually dead. Just don't. Resist it. Live. Live a good life. Live a good life for the rest of your life, and there is a home that awaits each of us in heaven. If there's anyone here tonight who needs to put on Christ through baptism or has been living like a chicken, for lack of a better phrase based on tonight's lesson, and needs the prayers of the church, wants the support, wants to be encouraged, that's what we're here for, and we're going to stand and sing a song to encourage you.